Welcome to Focus on the Upstate, a program dedicated to informing you about organizations that serve our community and how you can get involved with them. Here's your host, Chris Evans.
Good morning and welcome to Focus on the Upstate, a pre-recorded production of Entercom Communications. My name is Chris Evans, and before I introduce our guest, I want to share with you a program note that we have coming up after this show, immediately following a special interview hosted by Karina Delgado from Washington, D.C.'s 94.7 The Drive. That's one of the Entercom's sister stations in Washington, D.C. She spoke with Conservation International's Vice President of Climate Change, Shyla Ragav, on COVID-19's environmental effects, as well as Conservation International's tool to measure our carbon footprint. This is something that Entercom has decided to run in honor of the approaching Earth Day on Wednesday, April 22nd. So that will follow this program immediately after we have finished. My guest today is Dr. Karen Lummel, Behavioral Health Chief Medical Officer and Chair of the Department of Psychiatry for Prisma Health. Good morning.
Good morning, Chris.
Thank you for being here. And we are, this, I should mention that this is now, let me count, episode 5 of what I am calling the COVID Chronicles, as we kind of take stock of everything that's going on with the circumstances that we see here locally and nationally and even globally dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic, such as it is. Your specialty is in behavioral health. And you know what? I'm going to start with a question that I normally ask my guests, which is, what do you do and who do you do it for? Go ahead and introduce yourself to the audience.
Sure. Well, thank you. I know a few titles there, but my main role...
You've got more titles than that. I skipped some.
Well, I don't want to be bored. So I have a few jobs at Prisma Health and the University of South Carolina School of Medicine here in Greenville. So I trained and practiced in a few different specialties, including adult and child psychiatry, as well as emergency medicine. So I'm the chair of the department in psychiatry. So I spend some of my time with adults and children in the inpatient and emergency department setting, but also as an emergency physician. So I'm very thankful to be here. I know my colleagues, Dr. Cease and Dr. Sikosio, have also joined you on this show, so I feel like I'm in great company.
Indeed they have, and I hope you are. Thank you very much. Tell us, so many things have changed because of this outbreak of the coronavirus that has spread all over the world. I normally go and look up the most recent totals, and I haven't done that today. But suffice to say, I want to say that our totals, the last time I looked at them, which was fairly recently, we've got over 1 million people, 1 million cases confirmed globally, over 30,000 deaths just in the United States from coronavirus. How has your job changed because all of this is going on?
That's a good question. I think the biggest change that many of us in healthcare have noticed is, for those of us doing administrative work, we are often on the phone with different Skype calls hour after hour after hour throughout the day, and we really are realizing how much we miss that face-to-face communication. But we found creative ways to engage our colleagues, but also with our patients. So with the outpatient of the clinic setting, we've been doing almost 90 to 100% of our visits in the clinic are mostly done by telehealth, so direct-to-consumer from the office or the provider's own home to the patient's own home. And it's really worked very well for both our providers and our patients. They've really been thankful and been able to keep the appointments because they're at home, and it's much easier to do.
Well, and that's something that we've discussed on this program a few times, but I think it bears repeating. The advent of telemedicine is something that is just fascinating to me. It's been around as a technology. It's been around for a few years, but really hadn't caught on as a way for people to interact with healthcare professionals. It seems now, certainly with the stay-at-home orders and social distancing, et cetera, it seems that it's become much more popular as an option. And certainly Prisma Health has been kind of a local pioneer, at any rate, in providing that sort of thing through your website. PrismaHealth.org/coronavirus is the website that people can visit to make sure that they stay up to date with whatever Prisma Health is doing regarding coronavirus, and you've also introduced an app, Prisma Go, which helps people connect with doctors not in the office. It used to be the case that people wanted to go, that you wanted to see your doctor personally. Doctors used to make house calls, and that's not so much of a thing anymore. But there was something of a personal touch, but I think people are warming up now to telemedicine just because of the circumstances that we have here with this pandemic.
Yes, and I know I've heard some patient testimonials that this is almost second best to home, our home visits from years ago. So it's been well received. Some have had a little bit more challenge with the technology, but really, once we've worked through some hurdles, really been well embraced. And just the numbers from Prism Health for telehealth, and now probably over 74,000 visits since we've begun this process. Fortunately, in the world of psychiatry, we've actually been doing telepsychiatry for about 20 years.
Oh, wow.
So we've had T1 lines and now using the internet. Yes, much easier. So it's a little bit more challenging for other specialties, but for psychiatry, it has been much easier. And it's a lot of our teenagers, too, feel pretty comfortable in front of the television and playing video games. This is not that much different. So
I understand. So the next question is, you've talked about how your job as a healthcare professional has changed. Let's talk about how behavior in general has changed. A lot of people are finding more time on their hands, either because, unfortunately, they've been laid off or they are working from home. They can get their work done faster. They don't have to commute. Kids are home from school now. So, you know, they're learning online. And we've talked before about how schools have kind of turned around on a dime to push online courses to their students. But everybody is sort of, there's different circumstances than we normally have. How has the behavior of society changed because of all this?
That's a good question. I think there are different camps. So some people have embraced it and really found that they're reconnecting with their family members within the home, learning what their kids are doing, maybe challenging themselves with figuring out the math problems and helping their kids in ways they may not have before, reaching out to teachers in different ways. So I think it's been a positive in many ways. Even in neighborhoods, people are out walking, keeping within a safe distance, of course, but out walking and seeing people that they may not have seen actually moved into the neighborhood and didn't know they were there. So it's really been positive for some. On the other hand, there are some that struggle with the isolation, especially people who are very social or used to being in bigger community settings. So, you know, with Zoom and these other things where you can join with 10 people on a call or more, it's really helped with some of that. So it can be difficult for some.
Well, it certainly can. And that's a good point to bring up. What can people do if they find it difficult for them, for themselves to be isolated for long periods of time, or maybe they know somebody that finds it difficult to be isolated for long periods of time? What are some things that they can do to help alleviate that?
Right. Well, there are, and we mentioned telehealth before, so if
sure.
it becomes severe and it's worsening depression or thoughts of wanting to harm yourself, so suicidal thoughts, there's always the suicide hotline or things to engage with others just on a phone call, and then we can escalate it if we need additional resources for someone who needs that. Otherwise, there are other outreach programs. You're seeing many things on the internet that are saying, hey, join us. I know there are some programs here in the upstate for our veterans who may be struggling. So we have some groups that are reaching out intentionally to those they may know are struggling in this time and putting on social media. That has really been a huge plus, I will say. As a psychiatrist in the past, social media has concerned me, especially with adolescents.
Me
and
too.
Some of the things that were happening. But this is, you know, there are some ways that this has really helped because we're educating people through social media with social distancing and really seeing the curve flatten because of the message being sent out. But there are still some warnings, and you mentioned concerns about social media that we all have as well.
Sure. Well, and that I think is one thing that we should touch upon is the flattening of the curve. All of this ostensibly is to flatten the curve. Are we seeing progress in that regard? Is the curve actually being flattened?
That's the interesting question. I know there are many different predictive analytics out there, different models that we're seeing across the nation. And you know, in South Carolina, what we're seeing so far, and not only from the analytics, but checking our websites of those groups that are following, and internally, as healthcare providers, we are seeing that curve flatten. And that's something I'd encourage my providers to pass on to patients, to say, what you're doing is working. Continue this. This is really having a positive impact on the spread of coronavirus. So feel that you are doing something and it's having an impact.
What are some of the things that people need to be on the lookout for? I mean, obviously, we're taking a lot of precautions to avoid catching or transmitting coronavirus. What are some of the things that people might not pay attention to or that might even get worse because people are in close proximity. If they have to stay home, you're spending more time with your kids. You're spending more time with your spouse. I've heard speculation that divorce rates are going to go up after this because people are going to realize they don't like the person that they've married very much just because they're spending that extra time with them.
Right. And that I know is a worry that people have talked about, and we may not see that in that effect until a little bit later down the road. And is it more because of the economic impact and how that is in, really having taking a toll on relationships and marriages? Something that we are seeing some put on both hats here as an emergency physician and a psychiatrist are the worries about domestic violence. And some states are reporting a pretty significant increase in the calls. But what I worry about, and many of us worry about, is if you're in closer proximity to the person that is...
Yeah, you may not be able to get away from a situation like that.
Exactly, or make that phone call. Right.
Wow. I hadn't thought about that. I suppose that would go for kids, too. I mean, if kids are in an abusive situation at home, being home more may not be the best thing for them.
Yes, we have that worry as well. And I know some schools are reaching out with concerns if there's a higher risk area or with kids that they already follow, reaching out and being available. Several of the schools continue to have counselors available throughout this pandemic. So we are aware and watching as providers, but really encourage people to reach out if they have concerns about a family member or a neighbor or a friend. Please don't hesitate to reach out.
Reach out either to police or to health professionals, I guess.
Yes, source there the domestic violence hotline, or as I mentioned, the suicide hotline. Those are definitely resources that are available for our community.
One more time before we run out of time. Again, this interview is rather shorter than it normally would be because we have some special programming coming up. I want to mention the websites, prismahealth.org/coronavirus, where people can get more information on the things that Prisma Health is doing here in the community. Drive-through testing, for example. We mentioned the telemedicine. There's still, if you need to go and see a doctor and get a test, you can't do a test online. Telemedicine is nice,
right.
and a doctor can maybe recognize some symptoms if you think you might have a coronavirus infection, but you still need to be there in person to get tested. So drive-through testing is still something that's available through Prisma Health. I also want to mention our website, 1063WORD.com, where people can find out more information that is news-related, closings or openings mandated by the governor's office, for example, or things that might be going on in the community that are not necessarily medically or health-related the way that Prisma Health will be covering them. Dr. Karen Lummel, the Behavioral Health Chief Medical Officer and Chair of the Department of Psychiatry for Prisma Health, has been my guest today. Thank you very much for being here, Doctor.
Yes, thank you. And I appreciate your efforts to keep our community informed during this unusual time.
Well, and it's my pleasure. I want to remind you to stay tuned for that special interview by Karina Delgado from Entercom sister station 94.7 The Drive in Washington, D.C. She talked with Shyla Ragav, Vice President of Climate Change with Conservation International. That's coming up right now. I'm Chris Evans, and this has been Focus on the Upstate.
You've been listening to Focus on the Upstate with Chris Evans. If you would like more information on today's topic, email Chris at cevans@intercom.com.
I'm Karina Delgado with 94.7 The Drive. Now, I know with the COVID-19 pandemic taking up so much of our mental space, it's easy to forget that things like Earth Day are right around the corner. But I am on the phone today with the Vice President of Conservation International to speak about our Earth, the environment, and the COVID-19 crisis, and how the two are inextricably intertwined. Hi, Shyla. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for calling, Karina. I'm doing really well, thanks. How are you?
I am doing the best that I can every single day, just staying grateful and washing my hands.
Exactly. Same here.
If you could, just please take a moment to introduce yourself to our listeners.
Great, thanks. My name is Shyla Ragav. I am the Vice President of Climate Change at Conservation International, and my role is to oversee our climate change strategy and programs. Conservation International is present in about 30 countries around the world, and we have our headquarters is in Arlington, Virginia, and our mission is really about protecting nature for the well-being of humanity. And so the types of solutions that I work on are stopping deforestation, providing support and guidance to governments and to local communities to find investment solutions, policy solutions to protect nature for a more sustainable and healthy future.
Sure. Speaking of protection, we are all in protective mode right now. Protect our health, protect our families, protect our community. With that said, I think comes a sense of question, and people are speculating on whether or not the COVID-19 pandemic is a result of climate change. Can you speak to that a little bit for me?
Yeah, I think that's a really, really important question. And I think that our tendency is always to try to find connections between trends, but also to be able to find or get some good news, right, or find a silver lining amidst everything that we're experiencing. There isn't really any strong evidence that climate change is a direct cause of the coronavirus and its spread. But what we do know is that climate change is has a direct influence on the migration of species. Mm-hmm. And so in particular, what we're seeing is that ranges of species, whether it's even trees and plants where they can grow, or migratory patterns of species like fish or even birds and insects, these are all changing because of shifts in temperature and precipitation that is being caused by climate change. But I'd also like to highlight the fact that climate change is something that could multiply the losses and damages in times of crisis. So imagine if on top of dealing with COVID-19, we were also experiencing a drought or cataclysmic fires like we saw in Australia or in the Amazon. Well, it would really just have the impact of exacerbating those inequalities.
For example, we have seen some unusual earthquakes as well as tornadoes happening right now. And as we experience in our own communities the COVID-19 crisis, I can only imagine the devastation somewhere that was, you know, hit by a tornado during a time like this.
Exactly. And climate change can also affect human health even more by putting strain on vulnerable populations, or even increasing things like heat stress or the spread of disease vectors like mosquitoes that increase incidence of diseases like malaria. And so the human health implications are really going to be even more difficult to deal with when compounded with viruses and diseases like COVID-19. So I really think the main message here is that climate change and human health are inextricably linked.
Mm. Now, what we're seeing as a result of people social distancing and isolating in their homes is that pollution levels have dropped around the world as people stay home. Is this a hidden benefit of the pandemic? Do you think this will inspire people to limit their fossil fuel use once things get back to normal?
Yeah, I think that's also another trend that we're seeing so much in the news. And I think, you know, as I mentioned, I think everyone's looking for something positive to come out of all of the negative consequences of COVID-19. But I wouldn't necessarily call the drop in air pollution levels a hidden benefit, because they're likely just going to be temporary. And we haven't really, as a society, made the systemic shifts that are needed for these gains to persist or be sustained in the long term. So the way that I'd rather look at some of these short-term benefits is to focus on preparation and how we could have prepared better. So imagine if we had listened to the warnings from epidemiologists and others and prepared, right, 5, 6, 10 years ago. How different would that outcome have been in terms of how we're dealing with and experiencing losses due to this crisis right now? How would we have changed the future, and how would we have acted to do that, even just so that the virus could be contained or mitigated and our economy could be more resilient and prepared for that? So I think with climate change, the timeline is very clear, and so are the consequences. Mm-hmm. So the question that we have now is, how will we use these next few years, knowing what we know now and knowing that we have the opportunity to prepare better and to create a more resilient economy, so that we don't have to lose jobs, we don't have to decimate our economy, we can actually address climate change by building new and clean and thriving economies. So that's really what I hope we can take away from our lessons from dealing with COVID-19.
Oh, absolutely. Because learning from the tragedy is the most important part of triumph over adversity. That said, what can we do to make those preparations?
Yeah. So in the next 10 years, the science is really clear. Emissions need to be halved by 2030. So we basically have a decade to cut our emissions in half. And we know the types of solutions that can get us there. So it's clean and renewable energy. It's greening our agriculture system and our food system through regenerative agriculture and shifting towards more of a plant-based diet, shifting to public transportation, reduction of overall consumption like plastics, and other products that take a lot of energy to produce. So making those immediate changes now in our infrastructure, in our decisions, and our patterns today can set us up to be in a position to really achieve that outcome over the next 10 years. The second thing I would say is that since climate change is fundamentally, like COVID-19, a global crisis, it's going to require worldwide cooperation and attention to really focus on a coherent and coordinated global response where we can see a basis for global signals, global alignment and redirecting of financial flows. And so that's the second thing I would say is just really band together through political signals and political processes that can help develop a global response. And then the last thing I would say is to support natural climate solutions, which includes planting of trees, restoration of natural ecosystems, and protection of standing forests. This is really my personal passion because a third or more of the solution to climate change comes from protecting and restoring nature. And guess what? These solutions can also help maintain the resilience of our planet, provide us with clean air and clean water, and might also very well prevent the spread of viruses that so severely affect human health as well.
I absolutely agree 100% in that it is going to require everyone working together on the same page in order to surmount seemingly impossible feats, for sure. One last thing, Shaila, before I let you go, what is one way individuals can give back to nature and be a part of the bigger climate solution at the same time?
2020 is such an important year, so I think making addressing climate change a priority, making it a voting issue, an investment lens when you're looking at where you put your investments, your retirement portfolios, make it demands that we make as shareholders and consumers of many large companies, talking about it more. There's really something that every single person can do, no matter what your skill set, to activate creativity and kind of that ideation process of bringing solutions to the market. The other thing that people can do is use a tool that we developed that is available on our webpage. It's a carbon calculator, and it allows users to measure their carbon footprint and give back to conservation projects designed to keep forests standing and to help scale up restoration efforts. So listeners can visit conservation.org/calculator. And after using the calculator and assessing their carbon footprint, they can learn more about reforestation and conservation projects to which a donation can help support forests in the Amazon and places like Peru or Kenya. And so this is really something specific and tangible that everyone can do immediately and can also help us to maintain our optimism, our hope, and our sense of community in coming together around addressing climate change and protecting our planet for our future.
Oh, I absolutely love that. Okay, so while our listeners have, you know, a little bit of time on their hands and they're on their computers, they can check out that carbon calculator. Can you give us the website one more time, please?
Absolutely. It's conservation.org/calculator.
I love it. All right, Shaila, thank you so much for speaking with us today. You stay safe out there.
Thank you, Karina.